This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as always, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Whilst I was doing that, Mum did a little wave, which is very sweet. That's one for the people on YouTube and stuff watching. Mum, people will have seen the title. Yes. People will know what we're talking about. Today, we are going to talk about premature ejaculation, which is what most people know it as. However, I knew this would happen, and before we started recording, you mentioned that you had a different name for it, much like you do with ED, aka most people know it as erectile dysfunction. You referred to it as erectile difficulties.
Yes.
Very, very important, though. It's all about the wording. And of course, here you call it early ejaculation, not premature ejaculation. But could you please tell us what early ejaculation is?
Well, I guess I always think of it as ejaculating before you want to, really. But there is an official definition which reckons that less than a third of those who present for treatment meet the criteria for early ejaculation of requiring little or no stimulation to ejaculate and ejaculating within a minute of penetration three quarters of the time. So most of the time they do. And so in reality, what that tends to mean is that people they very often ejaculate before they attempt any kind of penetration. And sometimes contact with the vulva, or usually the vulva, maybe it may also be other orifices, but the vulva, they will ejaculate them before they actually enter. And, you know, that the definition is within a minute of entry, but it could be before entry as well.
Yeah. Almost like a minus 1 minute sort of thing. Yeah. Yes, and that's pretty much what the NHS website define it as well. But it's interesting, in their definition as well, they say a study involving 500 couples found the average time for ejaculation during intercourse was about 5.5 minutes after starting sex, which I thought was interesting, because I think sometimes with this, people think that people are going for hours and hours and hours, and they think that they ejaculate too soon, because they should be going for that long as well. But if the average time is 5.5 minutes, then maybe it's not so bad. But
no, it's not. It's not. Oh. This is misleading. I think they mean 5.5 minutes after arousal begins. I don't think they mean after penetration begins, because very few people last 5.5 minutes.
After, from when they start
thrusting, 5.5 minutes of thrusting, yeah.
Well, can you say that louder for the people at the back, just so they know? Just say again.
yeah, I mean,
5.5 minutes is a long time. As an average, 5.5 minutes is an average.
An average is between 3 and 10, an average. You know, average, you'd say, right? But it's not unusual to only last 2 minutes. Lasting longer than 10 minutes can be a problem, because you get bruised, you know, if you go on for much longer than that. What it's nice to be able to do is to have a minute's jiggly pokery, and then have a go at something else, and then return and sort of edge towards your orgasm, so that you know, each time you come close, it all becomes a bit more intense. I mean, and you can understand why. if you think about the build-up of sperm and stuff, all getting ready to come out.
Yeah,
to
rush out the gates.
Having to, and then, again. Yeah, and then,
Sorry, I just realised you'll pretend to be a sperm. yeah, about to come out and making weird faces.
I was. Equity member.
You are actually an equity member. Just really quickly explain to people who don't know what equity is and what an equity member
is. It's the actors' union.
And this, I promise you guys, is 100% true. When we got this podcast, Mum was like, right, I'm signing up to equity right now. Yeah. One thing as well I really want to quickly say, I've looked a lot of this up on the internet. As you know, I look on like Google Trends and stuff. On Google Trends, premature ejaculation is classed as a disease. Is it a disease?
No. I wouldn't call it a disease.
No, it's kind of crazy that though, isn't it? I mean,
I suppose people would call it a condition, but even then, you know, for the purposes of diagnosis and in order to get treatment, you have to have a list of symptoms and a name particularly in places where you pay for your own healthcare. So in America, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual has a list of all the conditions that there are. And if you don't have something that's in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual and therefore a code for it, you can't get paid for it. So your insurance company won't pay out. So it's important that you have a list of symptoms. But they change over time. You can, one Diagnostic and Statistical Manual will say this and then it will change. The next version will have something different because research is done and things like that. So this is very, very vague in a way.
And this is quite common. I mean, I was reading in a book called The Relate Guide to Sex and Intimacy by Kate Campbell that chronic early ejaculation could affect up to a third of men.
It's really common. And the thing is that there's loads of research and you don't know how accurate the research is or whether things have changed over time and how honest people are being either.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, that was what kind of like with the thing, you know, the study of 500 couples, you know, they're not going to be sat there watching really. And if they are, I know I would go longer if someone else was watching me because I'd be like, what the hell's going on? You know, I'm not feeling relaxed enough to, you know, so that might make it longer if they are. And if they're not watching, you would easily come out. When do they know when the point has started that they've started having sex?
Well, they put a kitchen timer on.
Really? And then you're just trying to beat that. So is it really, it's not like a proper, you know, do you know what I mean?
I haven't seen the research, so I don't know.
No, exactly.
But
maybe we
can't really know how they do it. But Masters and Johnson, you know, the people who came up with Sensate Focus and sex therapy, they used to get people in labs to have sex and they'd time them and things like that. And
including themselves, right?
Including themselves, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Which all that research should be thrown out now.
Well, no, I mean, that research would not be possible now. You're absolutely right.
Exactly. Mm. Just a couple of questions as well that I think came up when thinking about this. Premature ejaculation for women, ? Is that such a thing?
No.
Okay. But it's interesting because that came up online. It's just a question that throws up questions about things such as, you know, squirting potentially is the female ejaculate, but also throws up an interesting thing about women who come quote unquote too quickly. Do you think that is a possibility?
No, because women can come again and again and again and again and again.
So it's not really that much of an issue other than maybe they just be like, oh God, I'm quite sensitive.
It's not an issue at all. I mean, sometimes they feel, the clitoris feels sensitive when you've just climaxed. But generally speaking, you can change things up a bit. I mean, a really good trick is to have the woman climax and then have intercourse immediately, because the whole area is then engorged with blood and you're much more likely to get the nerves of the clitoris near the surface. And also there's, you know, the clitoris is engorged as well, the outer clitoris. So you're getting a lot more friction and, you know, there's a lot more chance of more orgasms, which may all have different quality as well.
So even if you do come within a minute, that might be fine.
Doesn't matter. The thing that matters is that men have a refractory period during which they can't have another erection. So some men do climax very quickly and then within quite a short time, they're able to come again. Because actually, ejaculation and orgasm are not the same thing.
Now, this is what I was almost trying to goad out of you then.
Because, well, you managed.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's why people say premature ejaculation for women. And then they go, yeah, well, maybe a woman can come too soon. It's like, well, technically, ejaculation and orgasm are separate things. The only reason I know that is because you tell me I think every time we speak. But explain that
we
to people.
We don't talk about sex every time we speak, dear listener.
it bloody well feels like it.
It doesn't.
It does. But explain for people, because I think people will be like, but there's no way. I've never had an orgasm without frigging coming. And I can't come without having an orgasm. So what do you mean they're different?
Well, you can do, and you could do if you were older. Now, so there are people who don't ejaculate for one reason or another. I mean, people who've had prostate surgery ejaculate backwards.
Excuse me?
They ejaculate into the bladder.
What?
So when they wee, then it comes out then. Don't look so horrified. Did you not know that?
Of course I did. What do you mean?
Some kinds of prostate surgery, yeah.
They redirect the prostate tube to sort of be like, right, just chuck it in there.
Well, it's just the way the surgery goes. Anyway.
Wow. So so if I wanted to have a child, would that not be possible anymore? It would be like, it might just be a bit wee if we're going to put it in the Petri dish.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've still got sperm, they could take it out with a needle. You could get it out with a needle.
Wow. But I'll still be orgasming, and I will technically still be ejaculating, but not out of the end of my penis, just into my own bladder.
Mm.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
So, but there are other times when people don't ejaculate, for often medical reasons, they don't ejaculate, but they still have a sensation of orgasm. So sometimes people with spinal cord injuries orgasm, but don't ejaculate. So it's possible. But what a lot of people do a lot of boys do, especially if they share a bedroom when they're teenagers or older children, they will masturbate secretly under the covers. And they often will squeeze the penis because they're trying to stop themselves from making a mess and people finding out. So there's the story about boys ejaculating into a sock, isn't there? That's why socks are smelly.
God, yeah. I think American Pie hasn't helped that either. Yeah, that was in that shit.
That's not why socks are smelly. But it's something they do. And you can get so into the habit of doing that that you don't ejaculate fully. You only ejaculate a little bit. So that I have worked with quite a few people where they reported having a seeping kind of experience where it's like they orgasm, but they don't ejaculate. They don't spurt. They have a bit of semen seeps out, a bit like pre-cum, but a bit more than that. And then, 10 minutes later, they're good to go again.
Well,
and some people always do that. And then they have a more intense orgasm the second time around.
Really?
Mm.
And is that more sprayy or is that still...
No, that's sprays. No, that's a proper squirty one.
Oh, that... Right. From now on in this episode, we'll call it squirty versus seepy.
Very good. Yeah,
that's fine. We'll go with that. I mean, because this sort of goes on to what are the causes, because I think that's what's interesting about this. And again, the NHS website says that there's two kinds. There's primary premature ejaculation, which we're calling early ejaculation, which is where you've always had the quote-unquote problem, and secondary early ejaculation or acquired premature ejaculation, where you recently developed the problem again.
It's still early. It's acquired early.
Yeah, it's acquired early. Yeah, ejaculation. Yeah. I'm trying to edit out the word premature as I read it into early ejaculation. But that, would you say, is... So I've written... Because there are psychological reasons. I mean, people talk about early ejaculation with a new partner.
Yeah, because it's very exciting. And also, you might be very nervous.
Yeah.
Which
I think that kind of is fine.
Which makes sense.
Whereas long-term relationship?
Long-term relationship, again, you might be anxious or you might not be having sex very often. So in longer relationships, people quite often have sex very rarely. And so there's a sort of build-up of excitement.
And people talk about a history of sexual abuse sometimes having an effect.
If they've been sexually abused, they may want to get the sex over quickly.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they're in the habit of, because your brain reads your body and it goes, aha, we're aroused. Okay, we have to hurry to orgasm. Mm. So you have to rewire the brain.
Which also goes back to the thing that you were saying before, which was like, some of these people, usually when they're a kid, they share a bedroom, etc., etc., they have to masturbate quietly, masturbate fast, masturbate without a mess. All those things could like create this, because it's interesting, and I really don't want to open the can of worms of taking too long to orgasm, because that is, almost is an entire podcast in itself. But
no, it is an entire podcast in itself.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's why I think we should save that and, you know, edge that, ourselves.
That's delayed ejaculation.
Yes, and we should definitely talk about that at some point, but we'll delay. I think the same can be said for that. You know, sometimes some of the reasons for that are gripping your penis too tightly, which and so that then when you do come to have sex with someone else, they're not doing the same things that you've done to make yourself orgasm. You know, people call it the death grip, stuff like that. So that is very interesting. What?
Nothing. I'm just thinking. You just had to mention the death grip. You just had to.
I just think it's interesting because it's like the same thing you do can have both outcomes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm not mentioning it for any sort
just,
of reason
because it was just like the point. What is the point here?
He is so desperate to slyly tell a sex therapist about this and be like, "What's going on there?"
No. Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, I mean, with most of these things, as I say, the brain reads the body. So if you've got into the habit of masturbating in a particular way or having sex in a particular way. Because a previous relationship might have, you might have been made to hurry up. I mean, a lot of people have a partner who doesn't like sex, and so they hurry up. Or they have a belief that the partner doesn't like sex, so they hurry up. Or they feel that they're in pain, so they hurry up. I mean, I would argue that you shouldn't be doing it at all in those situations. But sometimes people want to. So someone hurries. And then with the next partner, they're still in the... their brain still thinks they need to hurry.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. So and then the physiological things. I mean, we've talked about, funnily enough, we mentioned the prostate already today, and inflammation of the prostate gland.
Yes.
Prostatitis.
Yes.
I pronounced that right? I feel like maybe I've had an extra ST in there somewhere.
No. If the prostate's more sensitive because it's inflamed, you're likely to come more quickly.
Yeah.
And
the prostate,
if it's stimulated... But, you know, can give men a lot of pleasure. So
we've
inflamed,
had people on the podcast talking about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense.
So I've also written here, and they mentioned online as well, but this is kind of the thing, it's coming back to the death grip thing again, but I find this interesting as well. Alcohol and drugs like cocaine, they specifically mention those and they can cause early ejaculation. So they say they can both relax you and make things more sensitive, and they can both disrupt the coordination between the brain and the genitals. It's interesting, though, because they can also have the opposite effect, the other way, and they can delay. So I know people that are like, oh, I'm going to drink loads tonight so I can last longer, that sort of thing. Mm. So is this youth an inexperienced one as well?
Well, it used to be believed that, yes, you would grow out of it. You know, more experience would help. But there's now research that suggests that some people... do just come very quickly. And it might just be something that's lifelong and you just have to manage it.
Lifelong and might have to manage it. Well, maybe we can come back in part two, talk a little bit about the effect it can have on you, if this is the case, the effect it can have on your partners and some potential treatments as well.
Good idea.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, we mentioned just then, before the break, that we should talk about the effect it can have on individuals. And I think this might be a bit open and sharp, but when people come to you with issues around early ejaculation, what are they feeling like? What is the effect on them and their relationships?
Well, yeah, I mean, people feel that they miss out on some closeness. And interestingly, a lot of men in straight relationships believe that intercourse is the only way that their partner can orgasm. And that's very rarely the case. I mean, but some people believe that, and they believe that they're really letting their partner down if they come too soon. But actually, for a lot of people, it opens up all kinds of new ways of having sex if they have relied on intercourse in the past. And this has become a thing for some reason. And because somebody is so worried about it happening, it keeps on happening. That's very common. So they really believe that the pumping away is what gives them their orgasm. And that's rarely the case. Often they just need a bit of education.
Yeah.
And then things improve a lot.
Let's go straight to that then. Therapy. Talk to me about what you would, if someone came to you, let's say, yeah, either a person or a couple, and they were like, this is a problem in our relationship. What would you say?
Well, there's a shame. but I would, it's important to know what it means to the couple and what exactly is happening. So it would vary from one person to another. And people have different solutions that they are comfortable with. So not everybody wants to go down a psychosexual route. I mean, some people are much more interested in a kind of medical solution. So sometimes GPs will prescribe SSRIs.
So an SSRI, just to say, is a selective serotonin reuptake
inhibitor, which are usually used for depression, but are quite good at slowing you down sexually. I mean, it's one of the side effects of SSRIs that people take longer.
But it's funny, what as the antidepressants often on them, they say, here are some of the side effects and potential downsides. It can mean that it takes longer to come. And some people read that and go, ah, fuck that. Others read and go, boy, oh boy.
Hooray.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
So you can also use a local anaesthetic.
Yeah, like creams and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So such as lidocaine.
Lidocaine, yeah.
Yeah. And that's meant to make it less sensitive.
It makes it less sensitive, makes the penis less sensitive. It's a good idea to wear a condom with that. I mean, because otherwise you have to have a wash before you can have intercourse. It can cause skin irritation in you or your partner.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. But for some people, it works brilliantly. And that's all they need. Personally, I've had clients who've tried it and it hasn't worked. But I know lots of other therapists who have said it's worked really, really well. Most of my clients have managed this through sort of re-educating their brains, really, which is the preferred option for me, because then you don't have to rely on lidocaine or something else.
So
you don't
feel
that you're not in charge, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and you need your props and your crutch and all that sort of stuff. So then that re-education, this is the real sex education, so we should really dwell on that. What sort of stuff do you mean?
So some people are not aware of their point of inevitability, as it's called. This is the point where they're of no return, where you're going to climax, whatever happens, you're going to come. So you can give people exercises to help them to recognize that point. So, you'd give them homework and they learn to recognize their point of inevitability. Once they've done that, then they can start to train themselves to last longer if they want to. And that has varying success. But I mean, if you don't recognize it, and the vast majority of people with EE don't recognize it, how can you stop it? If you see what I mean? Thinking of light bulbs doesn't seem to work.
It's funny. The NHS website, the last thing they say is taking breaks during sex, I think, and that's fair enough. I think taking breaks during sex.
Yeah, taking breaks is a good idea.
That is a good idea. But as part of that, they say, and distracting yourself by thinking about something completely different. And people often make that joke being like, grandma naked and cold on a wet day. Like, I mean, stuff, I know. It's mad. And the thing is, realistically, though, and it comes back to the relearning about something that I read in this book called The Late Guide to Sex and Intimacy by Kate Campbell. The thing is, when you worry about coming too soon, and you're thinking about the weird things you're trying to think about to stop yourself from having sex and stuff, what ends up happening is you're so focused on that. Sex is often ruined anyway.
Well, sex you're so is often, busy. Often ruined anyway because people are so focused on outcomes, as yeah. you're saying, that they're all they're thinking about is getting through the experience and surviving it. And that, so, yeah. so they're not focused on pleasure at all.
Yeah.
And which is really awful, which is really sad. And so what we want to do is to get people to focus in on their pleasure and work with that. Now, when you go into an actual sex therapy program, what you're trying to do is rewire the brain and deal with anxiety and see if there's anything underlying all of this, if there's some trauma in your past or something like that that's feeding into it. So you go right back to basics and learn about touch without sexual stimulation, although people quite often enjoy it and get aroused anyway. But you're going back to basics. You're confusing your brain, your muddled brain, which always takes cues and then makes you climax. If you make the brain relearn it, if you rewire your brain so that it doesn't just follow the same neural pathways all the time because you're doing the same thing, then you often get a very different outcome. Very different. And if you're also learning to deal with your anxiety about it all going wrong, and you're getting back in touch with your pleasure centers, and you're able to really just relax and discover what you like, which a lot of people don't really know, then you know, then it all works brilliantly, and you won't have to rely on SSRIs or anything else. You'll just be able to feel comfortable with what you can achieve. And that idea of taking breaks. So what I was saying earlier, you know, having a little bit of intercourse and then doing something else, and then a little bit of intercourse and doing something else, you can learn to do that. And you can teach yourself to do that when you masturbate. You can take the break and then go. So you can start to learn to do that so that the brain starts to expect that as well. And then you can start doing it with your partner. So you can have a signal, so you can get your partner on top and get your partner to stop. Or you can stop if you're thrusting. I mean that works very well as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds great. And I think for a lot of people, whether they're dealing with this issue or anything, they will think, yeah, God, I mean, sex sometimes is just about getting through it, which is kind of crazy and isn't about the pleasure anymore. So, yeah, that'll be the preferred method, I think. So then the home remedies then that the NHS give. Oh, dear. Well, you know what? Mum makes these already. So the first one, but would these not be sort of semi-similar to what you would say are those little tips and bits of homework that you gave? Because so point number one, they say masturbating, this is slightly different, 1 to 2 hours before having
that
sex.
That is not what I said.
No, absolutely that isn't what not. You said.
No. Because what you're doing is you're doing the same thing. You're teaching your brain the way you have sex.
Wow.
You're doing a rubbish job there of changing things. You're just reinforcing it. So absolutely not. No. Thank you, NHS.
Yeah. Oh God. Maybe I'll stop referring to this being the NHS so much because I'm coming for them. I love you, NHS. Because I think that will anecdotally for a lot of people might help, but there's a couple of there's a couple of problems there.
Well, but if it does help, then there probably isn't a problem, a physiological problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's psychological.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, you know, if you masturbate and then 2 hours later have sex again, there'll be a lot more ejaculate around. You'll be leaking actual, like, not just pre-cum this time, like a lot more cummy-cum-cum. So you need to be careful of that. You need to, basically, you'll get a condom on ASAP Rocky.
Yeah.
But also, you might become less sensitive, which is great, but you might overdo it and you might be not sensitive at all and have a completely different problem.
But you might be more sensitive. You might be so turned on by masturbating. I mean, particularly if you were thinking about your partner, you might be so turned on by masturbating earlier that you just can't wait for intercourse. And you literally can't wait, and you're more likely to climax. There are real problems with masturbating before intercourse. Really, I would. It's not something I'd recommend.
Okay, well, they're off to a great start with this list.
If it works for people, if you've tried it and it works, then well done. That's absolutely fine. Go for it.
Yeah.
People I see have tried all these in this list, haven't worked.
The things that you would send away for people to do would be to masturbate, but in certain ways, like you say, stopping, trying to realise their point of inevitability, you would not prescribe them to masturbate 2 hours before.
If it was really, really, if there was a really, really big problem with an association between the way somebody masturbates and their brain, if I think that from what they're describing, then I would do it completely separately from any exercises they do with their partner and not at the same time at all. I mean, traditionally, you do, you know, people would be prescribing sensate focus exercises to go alongside this, but sometimes
sensate focus, which is
the touching exercises where you rewire your brain
to sort of reteach you what you to are into and what you. Feels nice. So, and so that sort of stuff.
Sometimes, I mean, usually it's fine to masturbate it while you're not while you're doing it. Well, sometimes while you're doing it, but. In the same time scale during, you know, one day you do your sensate focus, another day you masturbate, that's fine. But if there's an issue with that, you wouldn't allow somebody to do that. You'd stop masturbation altogether so that they just relearn. But for this, yes, masturbating so you can recognise your point of inevitability, masturbating so that you can train yourself. If you want to last longer, if you can attempt that, doesn't always work, but, you know, it's worth a go, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Using a thick condom to decrease sensation.
It can increase sensation as well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, what? How? What? Because it's thicker and it's just tighter. And ooh, bloody hell.
You could come putting it in the condom.
Jeez.
I've heard of that before.
Yeah, well, that's not.
And some people, you know, people who have anal sex will be wearing a thicker condom anyway.
Yeah. Yeah,
and two condoms is very dangerous. Don't do that.
Don't double bag.
No.
Taking a deep breath to briefly shut out the ejaculatory reflex, an automatic reflex of the body during which you ejaculate. Is that right? I feel like taking a deep breath does sound a little bit like, you know, like a sort of wellness session. It just sounds like a bit like, you're going to come, are you? Take a deep breath and don't. I sort of feel like it's not that helpful.
Well,
I'd be like, I'm taking a lot of deep breaths right now.
But you know the open up your throat and you'll relax. That's what they say, isn't it? Open up your throat and you'll relax. If you relax, you're going to climax.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It might work for some people. I've not heard of it working.
Having sex with your partner on top to allow them to pull away when you're close to ejaculating.
Yeah, that's if, I mean, yeah. Absolutely. But I think that sometimes you need to experiment to find out which is the least stimulating position for you. And sometimes I think the real reason for putting the partner on top is that they can control their orgasm better when they're on top, because you've got to tell them to stop. If you're a missionary, you can just stop.
Yeah. Or
so this is really, you know, this is a bit tricky because it's partly about making sure that your partner is having a good time.
Mm. And then the last one is taking breaks during sex, which we are on board with, but they just add this random
not
and
distracting
in there.
Yourself by what?
Distracting yourself by thinking about someone complete or someone completely different. Distracting yourself by thinking about something completely different. I mean, if we're talking about creating new neural pathways, you know, you might be in a real pickle there if you.
Well, you
start
might
thinking,
start bloody getting aroused by light bulbs if you keep doing that.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, can you imagine?
Well, I'm trying not to, but I can't bloody help it. I'm not going to come. Okay, amazing. Well, to be honest, I think we've done a really good bloody job there. Let's just recap, class. We've talked about what it is. We've talked about what causes it. We've talked about what effect it has on people. And we've talked about the remedies. My, oh, my. That's a good bloody job, isn't it? I think that's great. Well, thank you so much for listening, everyone.
If anyone does have any good ideas that work for them, of course, we'd be interested to hear.
Right then. Now you got me thinking. Okay, what do you or what would you think about so that you wouldn't come?
Yes.
Is it light bulbs? We'll pop that in the on the question thing on Spotify, but also put it on our Instagram page as well. That's a fun one. That is a fun one. Can we think of something for a poll?
Oh, yeah. Well, have you ever experienced it would be an interesting one, because I think an awful lot of people have at some point. It's really common. And one of the causes is it having happened once for some reason. And then you just get so frightened of it happening that it keeps on happening.
just again the same as erectile difficulties.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Let's definitely do that. And you know what? A lot of people hopefully will see the results of that poll and feel a lot better because I, you know, of anyone who's been sexually active with a penis.
With a penis or having a penis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with a penis in the activities and they've been sexually active for more than 3 or 4 years, I mean, they're going to have come across this at some point. So, yeah, very interesting. Well, that will make people feel better. Where to find all that stuff? We are at the RSE Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and X.
Oh, formerly known as Twitter.
And make sure you're subscribing and following to this podcast, The Real Sex Education, wherever you're listening to or watching it right now. And so you're ready for the next episode when we return next week.
Hurrah!
We will see you then.
Bye!
Bye! You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.